religion that we have to remember when we're talking about that makes it such a hot topic issue is because we're talking about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who is the Most High? Who is the divine authority? It's all about the claim to the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody. We're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge. So ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Hello, universal, spiritual, beautiful hive mind. Today is September 13th, 2022. I'm your host, Nate Kapp, joined by co-host Brandon Martin. Welcome to the 56th Cubbyhole Podcast, where critical topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. The website for this show is cubbyhole.com. That's CubbyHole.com. And if you prefer to listen to this show on a different platform, you can also listen with Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Pandora, Simplecast, YouTube, Odyssey, Minds, BitChute, and much more. Welcome back, Brandon.
Howdy, Nate. It's great to be back on here with you.
It's been a long, 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 long time.
Yeah, it has. It's something I've been very much looking forward to. And I know that you also have been looking forward to getting me back on. And I'm ready to start pushing out some more Cubbyhole content with you. And I just want to go ahead and give you a little shout out here that you've been doing great work since I've been on my hiatus from the Cubbyhole. And I just really appreciate all the work that you've been doing on here, because it's really been amazing opening up, Freemasonry the way that you have, and laying that foundation for the initiates. And you've brought a few things to the table that I was not aware of. And that's what this is all about, you know, is sharing all this information, because we're always going to find things and discover new things that we, you know, may have not discovered on our own. And that's what the roundtable is about. That's what the Cubbyhole is about.
Well, I really appreciate that, man. That's that means a lot. And, you know, especially coming from someone who, you know, I mean, you put out, I can't remember the name of your presentation. What was it called? The one where you did all 3 degrees.
Yeah, it was the aggregated synthesis of occult knowledge, part 2.
That's right.
It's a mouthful.
And I remember seeing that and being so inspired. And I know that there's a lot of knowledge that you put into that presentation that I haven't really covered in any of these shows. And I'm really hoping that maybe you would like to, you know, come on here and extrapolate a little bit more on those ideas or, you know, those concepts, because I think that they're very important, and I think that this is the right place to put them into this this show. And I really appreciate, you know, I know that this is something that I haven't really got to demonstrate, Freemasonry. And I'm really happy that, because I know you and Doug have wanted to get on here and talk about this topic, especially because this is a very big, important topic. And I appreciate you guys just letting me, it is my show, but it's our show, and, you know, letting me do this process on my own to allow me to extrapolate a lot of this information that I have accumulated over the years, and be able to put it into rhetoric and, you know, make these slides and it's been a really awesome journey for myself. And I know that, you know, I mean, having you and Doug come on here and help me put this information out there and bring your knowledge to the table to really show people how important this work is, it's really helped me, you know, grow in the way that I'm teaching it. And I'm really thankful that you guys have given me this space to allow me to extrapolate these ideas. And, you know, eventually I want to have you guys come back on and talk about this information more and, you know, add in what you have that is very equally or even more important to this information, because, you know, it's a very vast topic, and so many people, just even people who have studied a little bit of Freemasonry, have no idea how vast it really is. I mean, we could talk about the first degree for 20 episodes and still not completely cover it all, because it's just, it's an unfoldment. It's never ending. But, you know, I'm glad that I've been able to go through this for personal reasons. And, you know, I'm just really excited to hear what you and Doug have to bring to the table, and maybe even others who I haven't been able to bring on the show as well. But yeah, man, I'm really thankful that what I have put on the show has inspired you, and it's been a journey, man. Let me tell you.
Yeah, that's something I kind of mentioned at the Funnel Conference Q&A with Mark and Chris and Will, and, you know, all the wonderful minds that were there, was that as you do this process, you start to learn so much more about these things, and then you get to demonstrate what you learn. You get to practice what you learn and put it out there. So it's such a crucial point that I was trying to make in that Q&A, is that, you know, like the person brought up the question, like, when are you ready to start, or something like that. That's not verbatim, but she said, or he or she said something like that. And I felt that it was important to point out, like, you know, you're never going to be in the position where you're completely ready, you know, like that you feel you're so adept or perfected in this knowledge that you can just lay it out. And I mean, some people may be, obviously, but for most of us, we have to like start doing it to really put it out there and to really, you know, learn that stuff. So it's just like with any skill, like I said, you got to get in there, and you actually have to, you know, it's just like swimming, right? You're never going to learn to swim by not swimming. So you got to get in the pool. You got to jump in, you know, jump in that deep end, and just trust yourself that you can handle this, and you'll be surprised about what you can actually do when you put your mind to it and start to focus on this stuff. So yeah, I'm, like I said, I'm really appreciative of everything you've done and keeping the cubbyhole going. And you know, I was really happy to see your development and growth with Freemasonry, because Freemasonry is what we are trying to, you know, unravel ultimately in the show. And we're really trying to unravel the mysteries, you know, the occult mysteries. And Freemasonry happens to be, in my point of view, the root pillar or the root ball of all these mystery traditions. And yeah, it's just a vast topic, and it's very difficult for people to really grasp it, because most people, I'll just say this here and now, most people are caught up in a conspiratorial mindset. You know, they're caught up in this kind of delusional fantasy where they have apophenia. And it's something I talked about in my presentation at the Funnel Conference, which is, you know, like people will accuse you of apophenia, but there are actually people who have apophenia where they you know, see patterns where they're literally are not really, you know, there may be a pattern, but it's not what you're actually concluding that it is, you know. So like when we see a face in the clouds, yeah, we're picking up on that face in the clouds. It doesn't mean that it's a literal face in the clouds, though. You know, there may be some spiritual aspect to that that's personal for you, obviously, but it doesn't mean that it's actually a face in the clouds. You know, it's a shape that your brain is picking up on. And I feel that the reason why I bring that up is because I think I see people like demonizing and marginalizing Freemasonry or occult traditions or esotericism based upon these vague evident, like, well, it's non-evidence based. It's just like, oh, he's wearing a all-seeing eye. He must be part of the New World Order or the Illuminati. And it's like, it's so vague and it's not really based in the trivium and it's not based in evidence, you know? Like, I can design an all-seeing eye and wear it doesn't mean that I'm part of that conspiracy. I could even wear a jacket that says New World Order on it. It doesn't mean that I support the New World Order or I'm part of the New World Order, you know? And I think people really have this lack of reasoning when it comes to that. They jump to hyperbolic conclusions, meaning they blow them out of proportions. Now, if you start to see these things over and over and over and you can connect it to deeper things, you know, like, oh, he's wearing an all-seeing eye, you know, symbol here, and then he happens to be affiliated with, let's say, like a big banking institution, and then he has dark occult bloodlines, and then, you know, the evidence starts to pile up. Well, then you can start to make a reasonable assumption that there's something else going on.
Right.
Oh, you know, there's these mysterious financial things going on. Oh, he happens to be on the Epstein list, you know, like you can start putting the circumstantial evidence together, and then you can build a true enough picture of what's actually taking place. But just because you're wearing a symbol doesn't mean that you are a dark occultist or promoting that. So I think that's a really big thing, because people marginalize Freemasonry, and I know that's not what we're here to talk about, but I think it is really important to hammer on that as much as possible, because I still get it to this day, like, oh, I see Freemasonry symbols and on your wall, and you know, you're sharing Freemasonry stuff, that's, you know, that's satanic, that's Luciferian, that's all this stuff. I get harassed all the time for it, and it just shows how naive people are and just conspiratorial that they are. And it's like, conspiracies have a purpose, but they also can be very detrimental to reasoning if they're not used right. That's why I don't even like calling them conspiracy theorists anymore, or conspiracies in itself, because it's been so bastardized, that term. And obviously we know it was created by the CIA, or at least popularized by the CIA as a political divisive term, that, you know, I like to call it like a fantasy based delusion, you know. Like, these people have these fantasy-based delusions, and some of it is based in truth, but it's usually, like, very, very small percent. And then another thing on it, like, if you still need conspiracies to convince yourself that government is inherently illegitimate, then at some level you still believe that it's legitimate. You know, there's still a part of you that's like, oh, yeah, well, it might be good in these areas, but look, the CIA brought in opium and cocaine, you know, and all this stuff. That part of it, the deep state, that part of it's all evil. But this part, you know, it's like these constitutional Republicans, or, you know, these people who are constitutionalists, or, you know, just Republicans in general, conservatives, you know, they definitely have some truth in what they're talking about. But then you see, like, it just goes way out of hand, obviously. It gets wildly out of hand. But that ties in with the topics that we're going to bring up today, because, you know, our whole topic here is based in the mystery traditions, and I've been harassed because of what we are talking about, and it connects to Freemasonry. It's, you know, it's directly a part of the evolution of Freemasonry in my point of view. So, you know, I'll there for, well, you.
Yeah, two things I want to say is that, well, you know, maybe we should do a whole show on witch hunt, what that means, and, you know, killing the messenger, right? It's really interesting. With me personally, when I was younger, I remember going into people's homes and they had inverted pentagrams and red color everywhere. But they were really nice people. Or, you know, when I mean nice, I mean, you know, they were cool, they were chill, they were not acting evil, or, you know, talking about cutting people's heads off or shooting people or doing anything, you know, wrong. Or I would go into a Catholic's house and they would have crosses everywhere, and I wasn't affected by that, even though when I was younger I had kind of an atheistic mindset. I've never been really affected by symbols or what people associate themselves with. I've always looked at their character. How are they as a person, right? What's their behavior like? And I think that's something I've always picked up on all through my life. And I'm very thankful for that because, you know, when I did get into the knowledge of natural law and morality, then I really started to understand what I was really aligned to in the first place. You know, I mean, I still had a lot of issues in other areas, but I feel like that is something that is programmed into our mind. I mean, I don't feel like that. I know that it's programmed into our mind from a very early age. And when it comes to Freemasonry, it's very, I mean, you know, most people just don't understand that this is all demonized because they do not want you to look into it, period, the end. You know, that's just the bottom line. Now, speaking of what you were talking about in the beginning of what you just said, when you were talking about putting these presentations together to be able to understand your information better, it makes me think about how we, like you and Doug and others, agree that in the lodge system, they are teaching the trivium incorrectly. But I think it's important to understand that, okay, so they're teaching it incorrectly by making it grammar, rhetoric, and then logic, right? And yes, that is incorrect when we think about how it aligns to input, processing, and output. It doesn't align with that. It doesn't align with knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. It does not align. However, I will say that I believe it does align when it comes to presenting, because if you are putting in knowledge, taking in the grammar, and then you are putting it into rhetoric, let's say you don't really understand what you're saying, but you're putting it into rhetoric second, then you will have a better understanding once you have put it into rhetoric. So I do think it does work in that way, but that doesn't mean that it's correct in the way we think, right? In the way we learn. So I don't want to completely, I know we kind of, I especially kind of negated that idea and said that it was completely wrong, but I kind of, I want to, you know, just kind of backtrack a little bit and say that I don't fully agree with that, with what I said and what's all kind of agreed upon in certain minds that I've heard say that. So I think it is important to see it that way, but also to remember what is correct in the sense of learning, in the sense of thinking, in the sense of how we communicate. Right.
I can't agree more with that, actually.
Yeah. So I just I thought about that not too long ago, but then I just kind of forgot about it, I guess, but I'm glad we got to bring it up.
Yeah, I look at it. Well, I want to add on to that a little bit. I look at it as a mode. It's a mode that's used to help us enhance our ability to learn. But I think learning is not linear. You know, I think learning is very, just non-linear in its function, because like sometimes you learn by going and taking the action, and then there's like a feedback loop that happens, and then you understand, and then you realize the knowledge from it. So it's like sometimes vice versa it happens, you know. So I agree with you on that, and it's something that I struggled with for a while, but I understand why the mode of like the trivium is laid out that way for that purpose. But as you advance, you can start, you know, like learn the mode at the basic level, right? Learn it at that level. That's going to help you the most, you know. That's going to help you to strengthen a lot of your analytical skills and your creative outputs, and you know, it's going to help you strengthen your learning ability and your teaching ability. But also don't think that's the only way to learn, you know?
Right.
Because exactly. I think that's very limiting. And I think we're more powerful than that. And I don't think we're just robots, you know? Like, yeah, we're like computers, like we've talked about before, but we're not computers. You know, we are very complex, and this world is very unique with how it works in conjunction with our monad minds, you know. So I think that it's very important that you brought that up. I'm very happy you brought that up, actually, because I always wondered that in Freemasonry, why they did that, why they put, you know, grammar before logic, and how you explained it there. It makes a lot of sense. It makes complete sense, actually. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, I think it's because, you know, and I don't completely know about a lot of the rituals, which we probably never will, because a lot of them will just never be surfaced. It'll never be brought into the public eye. But I think that is how we learn the rituals, is by going through them, right? So we're, when you take in the information, take in the grammar, take in the knowledge, and you go through the ritual, go through speaking the ritual, this helps us come into the understanding of what we are putting out. And I do think that there's a lot to that. But yeah, I'm glad that we're talking about this now, because I think it is very important to differentiate between the learning, or both ways of learning, right? But also to understand that grammar, logic, rhetoric is in, it's a parallel to the other methods of the trivium, and it aligns with all the other ways of the trivium. I mean, there's so many different ways of the trivium is the threefold path, right? So all other aspects of our life that are a threefold path, they align with grammar, logic, and rhetoric. So it is very important to see the different ways of learning. So I'm going to go ahead and move on. Today we are what this show is supposed to be about, and I'm really happy that we started off with that information, but we're going to get into phonetic law. And this is all taking place within the second degree, okay? Because the second degree of Freemasonry, the fellowcraft, is about being in alignment with the heart, right? So we have to understand that to be in alignment with the heart, to have a heart-based intelligence, is to generate green. You know, when you think about the Anahata heart chakra, right? It's green. It's a green frequency in the middle. So we have to understand that the second degree is about heart-based intelligence. It is the heart. It is the middle point. And so we're going to start breaking down some very interesting and important words through green language, which is, you know, what I really went very deep into on the last episode. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to that show, I highly recommend going back and giving it a good listen and study, show 55. So you'll have a better understanding of what we're laying on the table today. Okay. And also, I'm going to be talking about, we're going to get a little bit into, Brandon's presentation, and you definitely should go listen to that presentation too, so you have a better understanding of what we're doing here as well. But before we get into the breakdowns, I would like to talk about the Convergence Conference that just took place this past weekend, September 10th and 11th. And also, Brandon gave his, like I said, he gave his green language presentation titled Green Language, a Study of the Occult Meaning of Words, Etymology, Phonetics, Philology, Puns, Symbolism, and Synchronicity. And this presentation was so well done, Brandon. I was just so blown away at how organized it was, and I really liked the way that it started off with, you know, talking about the types of minds that quickly dismiss this type of occult knowledge. And I think that you just did a fantastic job. It was just such a the aesthetics were really well done, and it was very readable. The volume, all everything was just very, very great. And I think it probably, to me, is your best overall presentation that I have seen you put out so far. And it's really crazy that I didn't really know that you were going to do this presentation. And, you know, I know that you started working on it this summer, but I didn't really know that you were doing that. And I don't think you knew that I was going to get into green language when I did. And it's kind of interesting that it all happened this summer, you know, in the Most High and the light of the year. So it was a little synchronistic, you could say. But anyway, yeah, man, if you want to talk about your presentation and what your thoughts are on the Convergence Conference, I'd love to hear what your thoughts are.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to first say thank you. I'm glad that you got a lot out of the presentation. Definitely put in, you know, over 1,000 hours of work on it, maybe more. I mean, honestly, in totality, obviously, many, many years, probably almost a decade of understanding, you know, the esotericism that goes into it. So it definitely hasn't been an easy process to fully wrap my mind around green language in itself, because, you know, we're taught in Western culture for sure, and I'm not sure about Eastern as much, but I know from my firsthand experience that in Western culture that any type of word breakdowns besides like etymology and stuff like that is just there for fun, you know, and it has no other purpose to it. And that's kind of what I started out with. Not only did I start out with breaking down the people who would be kind of recalcitrant to the information that I was bringing forward, but also that, you know, it's not just about fun. And it's good if you are having fun with it. I'm not saying don't have fun with it. Actually, if you're not having fun with it, then I think there's also a problem going on there, because it actually is fun. But to think that it is solely based on just play, just childish, right? Just this idea that it's immature, that you're just, you know, you're just making things up out of thin air, and it has no underlying universal meaning within it. I think that's part of that, what I was talking about earlier, the bastardization of esotericism. And I think it's an error in our thoughts about like how language works and how we create language. And that's kind of what I was trying to get at with the presentation, is like trying to show that there's a science underneath all this, and that, you know, the evolution of language is more complex and integrated. It's integrated into the universe. And as we've said many times, the universal language is symbol, and our language are based off symbols.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. You know, I think that's really important to understand with this. But yeah, I mean, the conference was amazing. You know, there was so many good, you know, presentations. The dance done by, what is her name? I think.
Dorian?
Yeah, I think it's Dorian. She did such an amazing symbolic job with that dance.
Oh, yeah,
part
for
one,
sure.
Two, I'd recommend anybody to watch that. That was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
both parts.
It was unfortunate that Will didn't get his presentation out, but I'm looking forward to that. And I'm sure it's going to be a home run, you know, because I know Will's work. But overall, the conference was amazing. It was one of the best things that I've seen in a long time. And I also feel honored that it was kind of inspired by the conference that we've put together. So that was really nice. And they've given a lot of thanks and appreciation for that. To me personally, and to be a part of it is amazing. Give me one second here, Nate. Yeah, it was really awesome that they, you know, gave a shout out, and it was really cool to be on the Q&A with Mark Passio. Obviously, that was an honor, and, you know, I'm hoping to see more things like that happen in the future. Obviously, I would like to see more organized efforts towards doing those things. And you don't have to do conferences. You can do whatever it might be in your community. You know, go out to your local park, set up some, you know, like give out some pamphlets or just print out, you know, resources for people to check out. You don't even have to pay for it. Like, you know, you got to pay for paper and ink and stuff like that, but you don't got to go out and order from a printing company or something. You probably do it at home and do whatever you can, you know, because that's really important. And even though I feel that, like to mention this, even though I feel that from my personal perspective, I don't think things are getting any better, but I do think that we are starting to organize a lot better within the people who are awakening. So that is a big plus. And what I mean by better is, like, do I see the world awakening? No, I don't. But I do see the people who are on that path organizing together a lot better.
I agree.
You know, I don't think we have any more numbers than we really ever have. Maybe if we do, it's just a very small percentage. But I do think that, you know, the people who are awake or, you know, in that process are starting to communicate, network, and really build friendships and, you know, arrange with other people in a much healthier fashion. So I think that's something I would like to point out there.
I agree. Yeah, man, I feel like Will Keller and Chris Jansen did an excellent job at getting everybody together, and just the organization was just pretty superb. And yeah, it was a bummer that Will's presentation didn't work, which is, you know, it sucked, but it's just funny because you look at him as somebody who is just like really on it and really understands all this stuff. And he, because, you know, you look at the rest of what he's done and it's like stellar. And then that happens. It's pretty wild. It just means that he's putting all his energy into helping everyone else. And, you know, he thought about himself last, and, you know, so he's a selfless dude. He's just he's got his heart in the right place, and now he knows where he needs to put more attention. But he did. I hope that he gets to hear this. And, Will, you did fantastic, man. I wanted to point out some other things. I also agree that, you know, this, they're really, I don't see, you know, too much of an awakening going on, but yeah, I do agree that we are starting to assemble better. We're starting to learn how to align. And that's the beauty of the conference name, Convergence. And I wanted to also point out that it's very symbolic too, because not only was it a convergence of speakers, but it was a convergence of the two pillars. You know, when you think of, you know, this is funnel two, Freedom Under Natural Law part two. So it's the one and the one, right? It's a convergence of the one and the one. And it was on the weekend of 9/11, where there was a, you know, trauma-based mind control ritual of that happened on 9/11, and this is dark masonry that took place, right? This done by the dark occultists of this world, the dominators of this world, the people, the dark psychologists of this world. It was a ritual to destroy those two pillars spiritually within our minds collectively. And this is something that anyone listening can go listen to Mark Passio break this down thoroughly. And he did such an amazing job at explaining this. But what I see in what happened this past weekend was, it was a convergence of 2 days of speakers who are in alignment to natural law, who are trying to do and are doing the right thing. So it's a convergence of it is a rebuilding of those pillars. It is a convergence of those pillars, right? And so I see it as a very strong opposing force of natural law. And, you know, I think it's a wonderful thing to see. And you know, the all the speakers were so spot on with you know, mostly everything that they were saying. I was just blown away by how well everybody put their presentations together, and everybody's rhetoric was awesome. Other than Will Keller, his was pretty bad, but
burn.
No, I'm sure it's amazing, and I'm definitely looking forward to checking that out whenever he gets it uploaded. But yeah, I mean, these conferences. I agree, Brandon. I mean, if you can't get a conference together, or you can't be part of a conference, get out and still put work out there. Do it in different art forms. You know, go out and speak your mind somewhere where there's a few people, if you're afraid of speaking in big crowds. I mean, there's so many ways, so many different avenues to get this information out there so people can hear it. If you really want to see the world change for the better, that's what needs to be done. You have to find your care to put your information, or put the information that you have accumulated, into a type of expression, a type of rhetoric.
Yeah, I think it's cool, like what you brought up, that they did it on 9/11, and that's kind of what I was trying to do with Seed Conference by doing it around May Day. You know, so I think that's right. Really important to counteract those rituals, those dark occult rituals that take place on these certain days.
Right. Counteract was the word I was trying to think of, not opposing, but I mean, opposing's, you know, right. Similar enough.
Sorry to do this again, but I got to check on these dogs again. They're wild. Give me one moment.
No worries.
Okay. He should be good. Let me know if he's too loud in the background. I put her in the kennel, so I don't have to do that again.
Yeah, no worries.
But yeah, like I was saying, the counteraction of the energetic rituals that are taking place, the dark occult rituals, I think that's really important to, you know, to put energy out there in a positive way in alignment with natural law. So I think that's what we're trying to do. So it was really awesome when I realized he did it on 9/11. I was like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. So excited about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, getting into green language, man, I think it kind of ties in with what we're just talking about, which is, you know, like these conferences are, in my point of view, like a way of green language manifesting itself, which is kind of advanced to understand that. But I think at a certain level, it definitely is.
For sure.
You know, because there's so much synchronicity that's taking place with the conferences.
Absolutely. Yeah, so far. Yeah, I agree, man. I mean, you know, when you're on the right path, you're on the right path, and you see the
absolutely
synchronicities.
There's no doubt about that.
You ready to move on to some green language?
Yes, I am.
Cool. Well, on the last episode, I gave quite a bit of definitions on green language to really give us as much of a clear picture as I could in the, you know, the amount of time that I did it in, which was like 2 hours. So hopefully it helped anyone listening who had trouble with this type of language, you know, because I understand it's a really difficult language to comprehend or to, you know, really grasp at first, because especially if you don't really understand morality. So if you really don't understand morality, if you really don't understand the workings of natural law, the science, then I think that is why it can be very difficult, because there's no purpose to what you're looking at. Okay? Because, you know, like I said, Freemasonry is a system of morality, right? So if you understand that green language is a frequency, it's not, because it's about thinking in green, it's about feeling in green, it's about being aligned, and you know when you are aligned, when you're acting upon the square, when you're upright in your emotions. And so when you understand this, when you're on the level, this is all this coming together. All three, when you think about the plumb rule, the square, and the level, when they are together, that is when you are creating this green frequency and being able to see in green and really understand what you're looking at, really understand what it is that you're observing. And I think it's so important to really grasp that, because that means that if you're listening right now and you don't understand natural law or morality, it is so vital to go learn that information and align to it first, so that way you can see this next step. Because for me, and I'm sure Brandon probably agrees, you're in the dark. You're on the floor still if you are trying to learn green language without the light, the green light of morality or natural law. You're still on the floor. And so it takes that courage to, and that tenacious ambition to learn, put yourself through the knowledge, pick the books up and really learn this information. So that way, when you do reach that level of green, you will be able to see, you will have that balanced frequency of heart-based intelligence, you know, being aligned, being on the level, acting on the square, right? So this is a very, very important thing. Now, obviously, natural law is an unfoldment. The information of natural law and morality is an unfoldment, especially when you get into Freemasonry, because, again, it is a system of morality. So the more that you learn about Freemasonry, the more you understand the whole universal system of natural law. And when Brandon and I were first starting on this journey of natural law, we did get into green language pretty early. And I think we understood, I would say for myself, I understood natural law enough. I understood morality enough to start to see the parallels in green language. And it was really cool, because when we were first starting out with trying to decode words, I mean, obviously we both were very influenced by Mark Passio, and then we would start bouncing words off of each other, which was really cool, because it would be encouraging. You know, Brandon would send me a word and I would break it down, or I'm sorry, he would break down a word and send it to me, and then I would look at that, and then I would want to send a word back to him that I had broken down, and it would just be this bouncing of ideas. Or, you know, he would send me a word and he would break it down in a certain way, and then I would go look up that word and what he said and add to it. And Doug too, you know, Doug would do the same thing. But it was just cool to have somebody to bounce ideas off of with, so that way it started to make things make more sense faster. And, you know, because I wasn't totally on board with green language at first. I thought it was just, you know, semantics, and it was just wordplay, and just reaching for ideas that weren't, you know, totally there. Kind of like what you were saying. I can't remember that word that you said, Brandon. What was it?
Apophenia.
Apophenia. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had apophenia in the very beginning of learning this language. But the thing is, I jumped in it and went for it. You know, I started doing all this etymology research and sounding out words and seeing what they meant. And sure enough, I started to see it for myself. I started to see the patterns. I started to recognize what the words were truly saying. whether any authority figure made claim over what I had discovered or not, you know? But yeah, man, I'm so thankful for you and Doug, because you both have helped me understand this language very deeply, and I've took it as pretty far, and now you have, and it's really cool. It's really cool to see that this language that is so occulted now being, you know, finally brought to the surface more. I think that it is vital for our research, because if we don't understand this language and the language of the birds, we're staying ignorant to our origins, and we're staying ignorant to, you know, the clarity of meaning of words.
Yeah, I also struggled with it in my early evolution and early awakening. I still had fun with it, but I struggled with recognizing that it actually was a critical, you know, scientific mystery. And it wasn't until in the past, you know, few years, after me and you had been, you know, dabbling in this and sending words back and forth, you know, so much, that I started to see, like, hey, this is based on something way, way deeper than just wordplay. And because the evidence started to build up for me, right? Like, oh, there went my dog. I don't know if you heard her. A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Hold on a second. But yeah, I thought it was just a form of wordplay, and I thought it was very speculative, and it is. It can be speculative. You know, that's the thing. You have to speculate on these things. That's what science is about sometimes. You got to, you know, lay down your hypothesis about something and see if it holds up. But after it started to pile up, man, you know, once it started to pile up, all the words and that we kept breaking down and all the deeper meanings we would find, it's like, well, there's something way, way more to this than just wordplay, you know, or even intentional, like man created hidden, like cryptic messages within it. And then you get into the deeper spiritual aspects of it, and that there is a universal, you know, spiritual component to it. Where what I would say is that, like, the universe speaks in symbols. I feel that it's relaying a higher message to us, kind of like Hermes Trismegistus would, from a higher force, whatever that force may be, whatever you want to look at it as, whether it's nature, like me and you would look at it as, and why we correlate it to green so much, and why that's so important with balance and light frequency and sound frequency. And but there's a deeper meaning, there's a deeper aspect within green language that relays something that your consciousness needs to help evolve it, you know, and to help make use and understanding of the, not only the language that you have, but also the, maybe the situation you're in, or the world that you're in, or, you know, a particular event that's taking place. So usually, like, for a lot of people, they may come to it first through puns. And then they may come to it through conspiracy, you know, or they may come to it through, like, magical thinking, you know, like people into Wiccan or Wicca stuff and things like that. They may come into it based off of that. I would say that mine was definitely through puns, and then through understanding the dark occult rather than anything else.
Right. Yeah, because it's dealing with morality. Yeah. So, well, before we go any further, I just wanted to let everyone know that there are going to be some slides for this episode. So if you go to cubbyhole.com and click on episodes 51 plus, then go down to show 56 and click on the slides, you'll see that there are a few today. Now, I'm not going to do it exactly like I did last time, but you will see them, and I'm going to put some of the art that I have done of the dark occult mockery in there. Something that Brandon actually shared in his presentation, which was really cool to see. He did a really good job of explaining all that, but we're going to also talk about that on this episode. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to with these words, we're going to get into some words here, some breakdowns shortly. We're going to spell out, we're going to sound out, and we're going to pull out some very interesting phonetic discoveries within these words that we're going to share. And we are going to, so what I call this is phonetic tracing. So like the tracing board, it is a, we're tracing out sounds and meaning by looking into the words deeper. And just in case you're not familiar with the word phonetics, it's a branch of linguistics that focuses on the production and classification of the world's speech sounds. So it's the production of speech that looks at the interaction of different vocal organs like the lips and tongue and teeth to produce particular sounds, okay? And remember that green language is a spiritual tool for the imagination, right? The imagination is our greatest tool, but green language is a spiritual tool that we discover and use in conjunction with our imagination to help us see further into things that we might not be able to see with regular definitions or regular ideas of the words. Okay? So it's a spiritual tool of methods to help us better understand the words that we're looking into and their definitions and their origins and their history a lot better. Okay? It's to help us understand what might not be able to be fully explained in general or even in many esteemed literatures by, you know, great scholarly authors. So before we go any further, I know Brandon wants to explain a little bit further in the phonetic law. So if you want to, Brandon, go ahead and...
Yeah, I think you explained the function of it pretty thoroughly. When you look it up, you'll probably find that it was defined by neo-grammarians in like the late 1800s or something like that. And you know, it's such a complex topic actually when you get into the actual study of phonetics. As you get deeper into the studies of phonetics, you'll find that there's, you know, many different branches of it. I think there's specifically two different branches of it. And those aspects have to deal with, obviously, the way that we produce speech or make sounds and the perception of those sounds and in the way that we understand that. So, you know, there's different modalities within phonetics. So it can get kind of advanced. So I want to point out that don't get lost in that. Like if you look it up and you're like, oh, this is such an advanced topic, you know, what did it mean? Just go with the basics of it, you know,
right?
Go with the phonetic pronunciations of letters or sounds or words or multiple letters and that are compound with each other, that are in conjunction with each other. And that's going to help you to understand what we're talking about here a lot easier. And I'm sure a lot of people do understand this, especially people listening to this show. But, you know, I think a deeper understanding of phonetics would help to evolve green language, but that's not what we're here to do today. So if you do want to like get into a little bit deeper understanding of it, I did break it down in the presentation that I just gave, which was, you know, I did have a nice little section in there that kind of covered a little bit of it. So you can check that out if you would like to. But I would like to bring up here something I didn't bring up in the presentation is that, and I'm not sure if you brought this up before or not, but we have to understand the historical connections to the word phonetic as well, which comes from Phoenicia Canaanite. So I think that's important to understand that like when we're studying our words, we're studying the ideas, right? Because the words carry the ideas that we're trying to express throughout time. So like, this is an idea that obviously arose, or at least was categorized and defined, that in that definition, that that categorization stuck around with us as phonetic. So obviously it was discovered before Phoenicia, but you know, that's the one that has carried through history. That's the one that has been robust enough that, or it hasn't been assimilated or obliterated, I should say. That's the word I'm looking for, obliterated by, you know, religious institutions and, you know, religious agendas to make sure that that the more ancient totemic societies and the way their languages and the way they produce sounds and things like this didn't come through into the modern day.
Right.
You know, so I think that's important to understand that it comes from Phoenicia. And that when you understand the Phoenicians and what they were doing and how they were a rising middle class and their connections with the papacy and the monarchs and what was going on at that time period in history, I think we can understand why phonetics has such a powerful influence on our culture, in not only in the way of the green language, but also in the way of just, you know, entertainment as well, because we find that in entertainment with puns and with things like this, we love it. You know, we're intrigued by it. There's something there that really attracts us deeply, even spiritually, to that type of entertainment. You know, when a comedian throws out a good puns or when a comedian breaks down a word and we're just like, oh my God, that's so funny, you know? Well, That's the exoteric part of it, but there's a deeper connection to something there that a lot of people wouldn't really understand unless they started to study themselves. And that's what this is all about. That's what you were talking about earlier. This is about the middle chamber, and this is about understanding ourselves. And one of the things that we need to understand is how to communicate with each other.
Right.
One of the biggest issues that we have in our world is a breakdown of communication.
Yep.
And it's a huge issue. And even within people within this community, it's a big issue. Like, I say certain terms that is pretty unanimous in this community, and then I get attacked for it. You know, it's like even the word freedom, if you use that word, you get attacked for it. You know, so I think it's really important to not get caught up to such a degree, get caught up in this strictness, this such seriousness about, you know, not understanding the synonymous words that go along with these things, you know? Right. What I mean is the other correlations that you might be able to bring up, you know, you can use different words for the same thing. And just because you're not using that word doesn't mean that you do not support that thing you're talking about. So for example, if I happen to say anarchy and I happen to mean freedom because of that, and if somebody else is like, well, I mean freedom and you're saying anarchy and you mean this, and it's like, well, no. And that's kind of what I talked about in the presentation too, is like, we need to understand that it's about what we're trying to communicate, the ideas. It's the ideas that are very important, and the symbols are the representation of those ideas. The sounds are frequency that is a, you know, wavelength that helps us to communicate and understand these ideas.
Right.
You know, and we've talked about that a little bit with cymatics and things like that. So
right.
I just wanted to bring that up. I think it's important too.
Very, you know. Very well said, man. And one thing I want to be clear on is that green language, or, you know, the language of the birds or phonetic law, is not just about or limited to something moral, because I really do believe you can find the truth through certain words that have a phonetic interpretation or a revealing that isn't really, you know, revealing something moral that can help us discover truth as well. So, you know, I'm not saying that green language or the language of the birds or phonetic law is limited to morality when we're in search for truth, but morality is what is what has to be understood that is really encoded into this, our language, because it's part of natural law or universal law, which is woven into our language for the purpose of giving us the potential to evolve into a higher type of being, a human, right? To be able to learn objective morality through language and symbol. Because, like I said, Freemasonry is a system of morality. Freemasonry is illustrated and it's taught, it's understood through symbols. So we have to understand how to be able to communicate in this way. But yeah, don't, like you said, don't get caught up in
I was going to give an example of, like, don't get caught up in trying to attack people because they happen to use a word incorrectly or in a way that doesn't fit what your meaning is in your head.
Right.
I think that's really important. You know, I don't think it's good to attack people because of that.
Right.
You know, I think it's better to educate them and say, okay, well, hey, maybe you're using the incorrect word, the definition for this word, but also, like, we have to be able to entertain, you know, the other, where people are coming from, because that's the most important thing, is that we can understand each other, right?
Right.
So, like, if we're just focusing on this, the symbol itself, it's no different than attacking, you know, somebody because they wear symbols in a way, you know, that we don't like.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, we're attacking somebody because they use the word that happened to not align with the definition that's the correct etymological definition or even the green language definition or whatever it might be. I think that's really important to understand. We don't need to attack them. We need to kind of relate with them, understand what they're saying. It's like when I talk to someone who uses the word anarchy in a way that is that means chaos or terrorism, you know, I entertain that. I'm like, okay, I understand where you're coming from. I let them know that that's not the correct, you know, definition, but I can entertain it. And also, one thing we have to recognize with words like this, like, if they've been used so long throughout literature, it's they're not just going to magically, like, change overnight. You know, you got to take them back, of course, but also you're always going to run into it in literature. So don't, like, throw a book out because somebody happened to say that anarchy meant chaos in it and be like, oh, this guy doesn't understand anything, you know, get rid of this book. I found so many people who are actually, you know, true spiritualists and people who we could consider true Freemasons, obviously, that use the word anarchy in that way. And some of their knowledge is the most profound knowledge I've ever come across, like Albert Churchward, right?
Right.
And it's like, okay, do I get rid of the book because he happened to use the word anarchy in this specific context? No, no, that's not what it is. And another thing is just try to follow the ideas, right? That's what we're trying to communicate here, is ideas. And that's why green language is so important, because it communicates ideas that are normally not understood or not revealed immediately to the listener, to the interpreter. And that's how I feel green language is. It's either intentionally put in there to reveal, like, to be cryptic and for it to be unlocked and you to, you know, kind of decipher it. And we all love mysteries. We love to decipher things. At least most of us do. Or it's intentional, or it's, you know, synchronistically put in there from the one great spirit or the one architect, grand architect, right, of the universe. So that we can, you know, and both of these can be a level of raising consciousness, but this one specifically is about expanding consciousness, expanding our ability to understand the world we work in, understand what we're supposed to be doing, our purpose, you know, and also maybe it's a cautionary thing too, because sometimes you'll find that within these words, there will be warnings, you know, and we have to have prudence at that point.
Right.
You know, so we have to take a step back and be like, whoa, you know, like, what that guy just said there was very revealing about his consciousness. And if you break down the words he used, it's like, oh, man. And then you find out and you're like, oh, yeah, this politician, you know, not that they're not all corrupt. You're like, oh, man. So I think that's really important. I don't know what you feel about that, but I think we're on the same page with that one.
Oh, for sure. And I'm going to bring some of the names up here shortly, but yeah, I agree. And I think it's so vital that when we are trying to communicate with each other, when someone is trying to communicate information to us with certain words, that instead of, you know, getting triggered or going on a witch hunt, we turn around and try to understand where they're coming from, but also just be open to the concept, the general idea, and really make sure that you're versed in what you're talking about. If you're not, then listen to what somebody else is saying. If they're using certain words that trigger you, listen to ask them what they mean by those words. Ask them to define what they mean, so that way you have a better understanding of them. That's how we communicate better. That's how we will get along better in the long run. And it's just, we are, too many of us are too quick to jump on somebody and go after them just because of a certain word that has been indoctrinated into us that we don't, you know, or that we see as scary or bad, and we don't really know enough about it. We have to be honest with ourselves to know that, you know, we need to do our work, and we need to try to understand not only what someone means by what they're saying, but also understand what they're saying by actually doing research, deep research, not just like go to your quick Google search, you know, actually look in books, look in actual etymology books, look in actual dictionary books, and see for yourselves, get the eclectic view and see the concept. So that way it's not so easy for you to be triggered.
I can't agree more. You know, I fell prey to that for a time period myself, so I completely understand why people do that, and I had to discipline myself out of that. I wanted to bring up, you brought up some really good points that kind of brought some stuff to my head before we move into the word breakdowns, is that, you know, etymology itself is so crucial, and we talk about etymology a lot on this podcast and in our own work, and it's really important that the control of definitions of words leads to the control of the way people think, because modernly we think in words now. And so when you can redefine a word, you can obfuscate it, you can, you know, change the underlying definition of that word to serve a specific purpose, to serve something that's antithetical than what it originally meant, you can completely invert it and pervert that definition. You change the way people react and behave when they hear those words or use those words. So it is a form of mind control when you're controlling language, when you're controlling words, when you're controlling literature. That's why censorship is so dangerous, because, you know, not only is you're removing the right to express yourself and to combat ideas in a nation, in a society, you know, because that's what you need to do. You need to be able to challenge ideas. You need to be able to challenge. And if you are censored, if your ideas are censored, you cannot challenge those ideas. But also it censors your own mind from being able to think those things.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's interesting. I know somebody, actually, I've met a few people like this who, if I say a certain word, like let's just say anarchy, and this is where a lot of people are at in their minds with this opinionism, where they make their opinion worth knowledge just so it comforts them and they never have to think for themselves. They never have to do any work. What they'll do is they'll pull these social tricks on you where they will say things like, well, anarchy, yeah, anarchy meant that, you know, when I explain what anarchy actually means, and they'll agree, yeah, anarchy meant that, but actually it means this now. This is how people understand it now, and that's what it means, right? And so then I, you know, I make the argument, well, okay, so you're going to negate what this word, what it actually meant in the first place. You're going to negate that and make it and go along with what everybody else has conformed to as like this hive mind mentality, right? In the negative sense. And, you know, this collectivist thought. Well, the mob thinks this. Well, so I'm going to think this, right? But then they'll flip it. And if you try to talk about green language, for instance, and say that this word, when you break it down like this, you can see that it means this. And then they'll say, no, you can't do that. You can't make a word mean something that it doesn't. You have to stick with what the definition says.
Right. Yeah, double standard there, that's for sure.
Yeah, and this is how a lot of people think because they are in this opinionism, that's what I call it, opinionism state of mind,
right,
where it's like, I'm just going to stick with my opinion on things, not actually what I can actually know and understand, but what my opinion is, so that way I never have to be responsible to know any of this stuff. And I can just make, you know, I'll go with what the opinion is of the mob. And that way the mob has my back, right? So it's this mob rule ignorant mentality, and that they, these types of mindsets go along with. And it is very, very toxic. It's very dangerous, because to think this way means that you are negating any true form of communication, which means that you really do not want to get along, you do not want to see things get better, and what you really want to do is build a world around you, because it's all based in ego, you know.
Right.
It's not based, you know, people who have this mindset, they're all about like they want to do things for the greater good, but that's not for the greater good.
No.
The greater good means you are trying to communicate with each other openly with the idea that maybe you don't know things and that you want to learn and that you can actually know information. You can know these words. You can, you know, have a more developed understanding of words and their definitions and their origins. You can. And that helps us understand each other better. But when you have these, you know, words that you think everybody, just because everybody else believes it in a certain way, you can just believe it that way without even looking up in the definition, just because of what everybody agrees on it. It's like, yeah, well, now you're using the word obfuscated. You're using the word in a very impure way. And, you know, purity is where the heart is. Purity is where we're going to, you know, find each other and have our connection.
Yeah, I'd like to add into that because, you know, I know a lot of people attack Marx's work because he uses a lot of etymology. And it's called in the, you know, in the intellectual circles, it's called the etymological fallacy. And there is some truth to it, you know. There, it's not that it's completely wrong, but I'm not talking about the people you're talking about. I'm talking about these intellects, these scholars, the debaters, you know, the people who are philosophers, quote unquote philosophers, who want to debate and argue, you know, they just want to argue all the time, right? Circular arguments. But it's one thing to like say, hey, this is the exclusive and only meaning that this word can ever have throughout all time. And my idea is based solely upon that. And it's another thing to say, hey, you know, like we're trying to make more clear what that word is. You know, like let's say, for example, anarchy, let's say it started out really simple and then we clarify it more. That's what definition means. It means to definite, you know, it takes it down and makes it more clear. And that's what we're trying to do, is make things more clear. So we can advance our definitions of words, you know. So let's say we started out with a really simple, unclear definition of anarchy, and then we move forward and we started to clarify that definition of anarchy in the future. Well, yeah, it's great to use that modern, you know, more clear, you know, word, but it doesn't mean you should negate the origins, even if it's less clear. Anyways, you never should negate any origins, because it's a chronology of ideas and how it's evolved. So it's really important to understand the idea and the culture that word's being used with. And then the other thing is like, you know, people will attack that, but they'll only point out that, hey, what you're talking about, hey, this word no longer means that, it means something completely opposite. And then you bring up the fallacy that, hey, what if that word was intentionally manipulated? You know, what does that mean then? You know, how do you reconcile this in your mind? Like, that it's okay to, like, you know, have this kind of whimsical idea about definitions of words, but what happens when it becomes less clear? Is what I'm talking about. What happens when the word becomes completely the opposite good for? Well, there's an issue there. You know, you have a fundamental issue. Not only is it a direct example of, you know, the decline of language, which is the decline of thought, but also it's a direct example in some cases of, you know, outside manipulation for that purpose of the decline of thought. And the divisive ideas that they're trying to put into the culture and trying to war against certain, you know, things. Like, it's the same thing. Like, people war against freedom of speech. People war against all these things. They get so politically identified with these certain things, right? And then they attack these things. And so I always bring that up, you know, like I've actually brought that up to somebody, and they can't answer that question because they can't admit that even though the word started out more clear than what it has become, they can't admit that not only is there an outside source influencing it, or it's a direct reference of the decline of consciousness, but also they can't admit that that it, I don't know if you can hear my dogs, but they're howling in the background. But if you can, I got huskies.
I can hear them now.
they can't admit that that there's an issue with words declining in their definitions and becoming less clear, and that's a fallacy, and then that's an issue, and that you have to reconcile that, you know, and that if it's less clear than it used to be and it doesn't hold up, then you need to go back to its origins, you know, no matter what. Like, you need to go back to its roots. You know, it's like saying, you know, you have a structure and you built this structure, and then all of a sudden the structure starts to cave in on itself, and you're like, no, you know, it's don't worry about this. You know, it's just fine. We'll just keep building, rather than going back to the foundation and being like, hey, you know, what happened here? Like, where did this, like, go wrong? Was it the foundation? Well, no, the foundation's good. It's clean. It's solid. Was it the, you know, the next step of that building of that structure? Where did this go wrong? You know, what happened to make the roof cave in on the structure or whatever? So, you know, so you got to find that point. And I think it's really important to point out. I don't want to keep ranting on about that, but that's something that I find people argue with me about that a lot. They're like, oh no, you're using an etymological fallacy. And then I point that out. And then I point out another thing. It's like, okay, even if it is an etymological fallacy, first of all, some fallacies are legitimate. The other thing is that you can't dismiss my entire argument based off of a few fallacies or even one fallacy. You know, if I happen to ad hominemly attack you, that doesn't mean my argument is invalid. But that's what people will do. They'll be like, oh, you assaulted my personal character, so your entire argument is invalid. I'm like, no, I'm freaking human, and you're an idiot. You know, you're an idiot, and I get emotional. Sorry. You know, that doesn't mean what I'm saying is any less true just because I'm like, you're an idiot. You know,
mm-hmm. Right.
So it's funny.
But yeah, it's just such a hedonistic mindset, really. You know, it's like when you think of the overthrow of Alexandria, the library, and you think about how that was taken over by fools. It was turned upside down by fools, by ignorance, by darkness. And it's because people just don't have any idea of principle or values. It's not taught, and then it's just dismissed by people when they get older because they're living in that hedonistic mindset. And where it's just like, I don't have a care in the world. I'm just going to have fun, enjoy this life that was given to me that I don't need to ever appreciate or to ever investigate or to ever question what kind of system is built into my mind. And I can just do whatever I want, believe whatever I want. And you know, if anybody has any problem, I just kind of laugh it off and walk away. And never turn and deal with it, you know, no care at all.
Right.
So it's just, you know, but I wanted to move forward because I because of time and also because I definitely, we have a lot of words to get into. And I also want to give some definitions, some more definitions. One of them I already said in the last episode, but I just want to give it again before the next slide that I'm going to talk about. So the first slide definition that I think is really important is it where it says green language at the top. It says used with the power of perception to be able to see further into advanced expressions of literature and phonetics. And then I would like to go to the next slide that says green language at the top. And it says, when it comes to green language, we can look at this language like the language of symbolism in the sense that we really don't have the need to search for what has already been found. We search for what has or what is not found. The utilization of green language reveals something upon which there is no other such adequate tool for the revealing of certain words and definitions and ideas. The answer would have to be that it is some kind of knowledge pertaining to things not known in the vernacular, concealed and only to be revealed within the degrees of the alchemical wedding aligned to natural law. So the alchemical wedding is the generator of being able to, you know, see and hear and speak in green. So green language is a method or a tool of clarifying what already is, but, you know, in a clearer and deeper sense. Okay, so those are the two slides that I wanted to make sure to cover before we go any further. And if you have anything you wanted to say on any of those, feel free.
No, I think that is highly accurate and very astute of you to clarify it that way.
Now, what I want you to remember is that all green language or any, you know, wordplay can be double-sided or it can have nothing at all. Right? So the point is to be able to see if the word reveals a, you know, morally coded message. And that's why green language is an occult language. And we also have to become symbol and phonetic literate for the reason that the, you know, dark master psychologists of this world know this information and they know how to use it against those who are ignorant of it. Those who are in the dark, they know how to go in your mind and completely build a whole system and control you with that system just by words, just by sounds. They understand the phonetics. They understand how the mind works, and we have to be aware of that. We have to understand that they are using Freemasonry against us because they know how it works on the mind. And so when they're using these word puns, these word plays, this green language against us, and we're not aware of it, we're not aware of how it works, we're not able to learn or read their language that they have created to install into our minds to control us. So we have to be very, very aware of this occult language. So I want to move on to the words, okay? So what Brandon and I are going to do for the rest of this show is share one word at a time with its phonetic breakdown. And, you know, we'll both give our input on each other's words as we share them. So when I share a word and the meaning of the word or its definition, then he can come in and add in what he thinks of that word and vice versa. Then, now one thing to keep in mind is, there may be more to the words that we're sharing here, and maybe you'll pick up on more of the meaning than what we are sharing. So, you know, make sure to listen to what we're saying and see if you can pick up on anything else. Okay. Now, since I see morality being the main important ingredient in green language, and I'm not saying that it's limited to morality, okay? But it, you know, it is very, very important, and I think, you know, anybody who is studying morality will understand what I'm trying to say, okay? But I'm going to start off with the word moral. So the word moral can be broke down into more all. And when you think of the word all, you think of the creator or the intelligence of the whole universe, the all in all, the everything that there is, right? Which is associated with God. And God can also be El. So you can remember I said that the vowels are universal, so they can be exchanged with other vowels. So all can be exchanged with L, E-L, right? And so that's E-L is equated with God. So more God. So either way, it's more with the creator, more aligning with the creator, because that's what being moral is about. More means the greater degree, a larger amount. It means quantity. So more aligning to the all or creator by doing more work to do the right thing, to be in alignment with the creator.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful one. I almost threw that into my presentation, actually. I think you nailed it. Really important to understand the vowels are interchangeable and universal. And, you know, more all is what we need. You know, we need more, more morals, right? We need to have more connection to natural law itself and to align to objective morality. So it's not a coincidence that that's in that word in my, you know, perspective of that. There's no doubt that that's intentionally trying to tell us that we need to be more connected to the L, you know, the L spirit. So
exactly.
Oh, go ahead.
I was saying exactly.
Oh, okay.
You know, that is very true.
Right. Well, I'll bring up something else. And I think names are really interesting to break down, right? I think this will get people interested in breaking down words. It's like starting to look at the meaning of your name, right? So I'm going to break my name down here, and I'm going to tell you what I've pulled out of my own name. And it's something I've shared with a lot of people. So Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, if we break it down into two components, it's Bran, B-R-A-N, and that relates back to Brahma, or Brahma, and that is a creative aspect in the Hindu tradition. So we have first the created aspect, and then Dawn, D-O-N, which is the morning light. So it's the dawn. But it's also you know, like the Don is a higher person in the mafia. You know, like he's the Don, right? So it's a high up level. So it has to do with the son, obviously. So Braun Don is the creative initiation. It literally is the sun at the spring equinox. And if you look at it etymologically, it proves this point because it comes from Irish and weed on the hill, but it's not just talking about the weed on the hill. It's talking about a weed that specifically only grows during the spring equinox. And it was a symbol for the spring equinox. So when they saw that weed, it would, you know, be a symbol for the sun rising in the east on the spring equinox. So that one was really profound to me, you know, the creative light, the initiation of light, the growth, you know. It also can be looked at as youthfulness, you know, the beginning of the year, the true new year when spring comes in. And then my last name, Martin, Mar can be connected to Mars, and in the Roman tradition, and I believe the Greek tradition as well, Mars was the god of war. And then tin is not only a metal, but it's also a number. So tin, at tin, you know, is a solar number. It's binary. It's one and zero. It's masculine and feminine, but it's also, you know, a solar archetype. So, you know, you can look at this as the, if you combine all of these together, you can look at it as, you know, the morning sun who becomes the spiritual warrior, you know, the one who unifies himself and becomes a spiritual warrior and raises himself out of darkness into light, and who's ready to do that, who's ready to temper himself like they would temper metal for war, for battle, you know. A battle-ready, you know, rebel, or a battle-ready spiritual individual, one who's on the hero's journey, as we would put here, you know, one who is ready to take up the sword and the shield and ready to defend truth at all costs. So, you know, I thought I would bring that one up.
Wow, man, you really pulled a lot out of your name.
Right, right.
That's cool. Yeah, I'd have to think about that one. You know, when I think of your name, I instantly, my phonetic brain is just like brand on. You know, I'm thinking of like a brand. You're like a brand, but it's ignited. But, you know, I haven't really thought it through. So, when I think of my name, I've thought about my name and I've tried to break it down, but I guess I never really did it enough to where I remember what I was breaking down before. But I do know that, you know, Nate is part of nature. Literally. <Right. laughs> So you know, I'm just, that's all I have at the moment. But that's really awesome, man. Do you want to do names of other people? Because I have a whole list of famous celebrities and political names that we could break down too. Really interesting.
You're welcome to bring up some of them, you know. That was the only name I was going to bring up.
Well, I wanted to talk about Trump and Joe Biden.
I was going to say we could bring up Trump, you know.
Don Trump and Joe Biden. So this is very, very interesting, these names, because when you look at Trump and you look at the dialectic of this insane mob of people who believe that this guy is like some kind of great savior and he's on their side and all this insanity, it's very interesting because when you look at the word Trump, now Trump is a very powerful word to understand because it literally means... I mean, it is a power of a word. It is to trump something, is to have to be, to cover something to with power, right? So he is, Trump is the true ump, Now, I know Doug actually brought that up to me, that he is the true ump. He's the true umpire, right? And so when this is what people believe, when they see this word, when they keep hearing this word in their subconscious, they believe that this guy really is the guy calling the shots. He's the true ump. That's what an umpire does. He calls the shots. He is the, it comes down to him what, in baseball, what happens to either team. You know, was it a foul ball? Well, the umpire has to call that. You know, did the baseball player make it into home base without getting tagged? The umpire has to call that. So the umpire is in charge of the whole game, right? So that's what people are hearing subconsciously when they see this guy. Now, it's all true in the sense that people really believe that this guy is the one calling the shots. So it's also, I also look at it as the true MP, meaning male power. Now, I know male is a little bit of a stretch, but, you know, understanding that, you know, this is a, this man really is to this, you know, mob of people, especially from the right wing politically, believe that this guy really possesses the true male power. and that's, I mean, it says it right in the word. Now, once Trump leaves, then we have, you know, right before, well, right at the end of Trump's 4 years, he was, you know, trying to get the shots implemented into our country, to bring the shots in for people to, you know, to believe that, you know, he's also a savior, with bringing in, you know, some kind of medicine to save everybody from this lockdown, from this pandemic. And then you have Joe Biden, who comes in as the savior for the left wing. Okay. And he's, you know, he's somebody who everybody sides with in this collective mindset, because to be a collective means that you're, you know, you have an average way of seeing the world. So that when you think of, you know, you have an average way of seeing the world because you don't have an individualist mindset. It's gone. It's bereft. So there's this collective mindset of the left wing who wants someone average, like an average Joe, right? And then you have that. What does Joe do when he is sworn into office? He comes in and he starts passing all these bills. And one of the biggest things that he did was make it to where everybody has to be ID'd to be able to go to school or to go to work or to fly, right? And right in his name, his, especially his last name, it says Joe B. Biden. So B-I-D apostrophe E-N, Joe B-I-D-N, because that's what Joe be doing. Joe B-I-D-N, you know, average Joe B-I-D-N, everybody.
Yep.
Because, yeah, because he's the savior. He's the one who is making sure we can go back to normal, right?
I wanted to add to the Trump thing, you know, Trump is also short for trumpet, and he seems to be, well, not seems to be, absolutely is a Pied Piper. So,
oh, yeah,
you know, he's blowing the false clarion call, you know, the clarion call for freedom. And this is why we saw like so many anarchists or libertarians like get swooped up into his agenda, or the agenda, not necessarily his agenda, but is because, you know, he seemed like that authentic, you know, person, but really it was just an illusion. Obviously, me and you saw right through that, which was obvious. And no matter what, anybody who's in that kind of position should never be trusted. So you can just tell, like, you just wrap people back up into the politics, the governmental politics of everything. And you could see that the people who were anarchists and libertarians that ended up, you know, turning in and supporting Trump were not sound on their principles, you know, and blowing that horn, that trumpet, you know, that's what the Pied Piper does. It's an illusion. You know, he lures you into a trap or an agenda that's not mm-hmm. actually what it looks like it is. You know, it's a proxy. But yeah, Joe B. Idean, and that's a good one. And it's funny you bring up ID because I was going to bring up the word idea. So idea etymologically means an archetype or an image from the mind of God, or the higher spirit, if you look it up etymologically. But if you break it down, you can do idea, and dia can be related to Deus, which is God, and an I. So, you know, it's also the eye on, but also the individual. And it could also represent the one great spirit, just the I, God, you know. So the idea comes from the mind of God. And so it's kind of interesting when we break that down. And then you can also get into the fact that IDs are a proxy form of the true idea of who you are in the mind of God. So the IDs are like proxies, like our identification, our egotistical, you know, proxies of our true identification, which is a component of the one great spirit. So we can look at ourselves as archetypes from the one great spirit, the mind of God. We can say that we are an idea in form, in a way. But when we have right. these IDs, you know, set upon us by false authorities within the system, you know, through maritime admiralty law and all this stuff, it's a proxy. It's not who you truly are, obviously. You know, it's a straw man is the way that I would put it. So I wanted to throw that out there.
Did you have another name that you wanted to break down?
Another name that I wanted to break down. Let's see here.
Or idea, or other words. It doesn't have to be names.
Right.
I just got a whole list of names.
Well, I think a good one to also that can kind of connect with what we're talking about here is culture. It's one that I use in my presentation. So if you just look at the word culture, culture, and that first, you know, component of that word is cult. And then ure is your, if you phonetically pronounce that. So it's your cult, literally. So culture has become your cult. So I want to make it clear, I'm not trying to say that all of culture itself is a cult. You know, I think there are, you know, healthy cultures, but this is relaying something that affects us today in the present moment of now, where our culture is a cult today. So it helps us to reveal, like, hey, am I actually initiated into a satanic cult? Damn well you are. You know, yes, you are. Look around you. You know, culture is, you know, people confuse culture with individuals, obviously, a lot. And I think that's part of that. You know, it's the groupthink. It's the group association system that we have. So you're in a cult. Welcome to it. You know, time to get out of it and reclaim your mind and reclaim your sovereignty away from these fake politicians, and all politicians are fake, but, you know, away from these false dogmatic authorities.
Yeah, I kind of look at that as, you know, culture. I look at it as, yeah, you have all these different man-made cultures, just like religions. But when we understand that really the one true religion is truth itself, or, you know, you could also relate that to natural law, being bound to natural law because it's a binding force. That's what religion is. Well, it's the same with culture. Is it's about recognizing the false culture or cult that you're part of, and then reuniting with your cult of true connection to nature.
Yeah. Yeah, I was gonna say that not all cults are the way that we think they are, you know, like there's
right.
cult can be to cultivate, to grow, right? To grow something. And that's about nature, you know, so that's about development. But then there's the cult that is actually like harmful, which is something that's based on dogma, manipulation, based in a structure of coercion. And it's a danger to other people who do not ascribe to that belief system.
Right. Here's one that I know you already gave in your presentation, but maybe I don't know if you've heard this breakdown of Freemasonry, but Frey comes from the Egyptian, or Freemasonry comes from the Egyptian Frey, which means the sun, and Mas meaning a child. So Frey Mas N, which means children of the sun or fire or sons of light.
Yeah, that.
So Frey is P-H-R-E, by the way.
Right, right. It's interesting because we do have the Norse god Freya, right?
As right.
Well, and that's where we get our word Friday from. But it's pretty much what I said. I didn't break it down in the way you did, but it aligns the same way. You know, that when I broke down Freemason, it was Free Ma Son, M-A-S-O-N, but that son can be like a child, or it can also be the light, S-U-N, so the sons of Ma. You know, Ma is the Egyptian goddess, the Egyptian deity of truth and justice, and so we are all sons of Ma, you know.
Right. I love that breakdown, you know, man. That's so awesome.
So yeah, and what you just said just reinforces that, you know, and that's what I'm talking about. It's like when you find these things and you can break them down and it means almost the exact same thing, and like that is the same thing. So it's like, oh, okay, you can't deny that, you know.
Right.
That's a good one. By the way, let's see, what could I bring up here? I think an interesting one that I thought of just the other day. I don't have my list of words, by the way, for anybody who's listening. I don't know where they went, but so I'm just doing this off the top of my head right now.
Well, I got plenty of words.
Yeah, I know you do. So I'm going to try to do my best here just off the top of my head. But I found this one the other day. It was example, right? And we can break this down as X amp L. Okay. And the X obviously can be the spot that marks the spot, right? That where the hidden treasure is, but it's also a component to the gavel, like we've talked about in many episodes on the show. And an amp, you know, is an amperage. It's something that, you know, turns up, it amplifies something, right? So it gives it more energy. It uplifts it. It elevates it, you know? And an L at the end, you know, which is like we talked about, God, the Hebrew word for God. So, you know, it's a component here that it's X is the hidden treasure, and we have to amplify ourselves to align with, you know, L, to align with God, to align with natural law. And it's interesting because L is also the prefix for electricity, right? So.
Right.
L also represents electricity, and amperage is also a component to electricity. So I felt that was kind of interesting.
That's cool, man. Yeah, because, I mean, it reinforces what example is, because what you're doing is you're trying to reinforce an idea.
Right,
by
right.
Giving an example.
Right, you're trying to reinforce that idea, and if you look at idea as something archetype from the mind of God, then you're reinforcing truth. You know,
right? You're amping it up.
Yeah, you're amping it up.
That's cool. Nice. Nice. I hate. Yeah. Now after. Oh yeah, I wanted to bring that up. Sethicus during the conference, the Convergence conference, we were all in the chat, and he was talking about how nice means, you know, ignorant or in the dark, and I. Or foolish, and I went and looked up that word, and that's what it means, and I'm just blown away. See, because, and that's the thing, we're ignorant to words that mean ignorance.
Right, right, it's so true. When I discovered that, it was a couple years ago, I was like, No wonder they say nice guys finish last, you know? I mean, it's so true.
Yeah, and that's right.
You know, nice people are people pleasers, obviously, and that's a really bad place to be psychologically. It's very abusive and, you know, not healthy. So, yeah, nice is not actually a good thing, you know, if we go by its true meaning.
Right.
What people use it in synonymous with is being moral or being polite or courteous or things like this, but it means you're foolish. You know, it means you're naive. It means you're gullible. It means that you're going to be walked all over, you know, you're going to be used like a rag doll.
Yep. And there's a reason why I have always, I know that I was indoctrinated into that word to use it in a way where it's like, when I say, when somebody does something cool or does something neat, I say, nice,
right?
You know?
Right.
And it's kind of, you know, I got it when I moved out west to California, everybody says awesome out there. And I really hated that word before I came to California, but then I found myself using it all the time. And then I also found myself using the word nice, but then I started thinking, once Sethicus brought that up, I was like, oh my God. We have been indoctrinated into using such a word of ignorance our whole life. And, you know, I'm still using that word because I'm trying to get out of that, using that word. I want to say better words. I want to say words of, that really mean what I'm trying to convey. If I say nice, I mean like, this is great, or this person is grateful, or this person has a positive energy, instead of saying nice, because now I know that I'm using this word spell and what its true purpose is. And also, if we are stuck saying that word like that, you know that it's been obfuscated, which means that everybody is falling into this, you know, just be nice rather than be honest, right?
Yeah, just be foolish.
Yeah, and that is what we are all being, you know, moved into,
right?
By using this word. We're being moved into a place of ignorance where we don't have to be honest. We just have to be nice.
Yep, go along to get along, right?
Yeah, and so it really just caps everything that I think of when I think of this like collectivist mindset. And, you know, I'm still learning, you know, there's still so many words that I'm ignorant to, but I recognize it. Now I'm making the changes within, and I'm going to do my best to never use that word again, because, well, in that, you know, the context of positive or grateful or whatever, I know now, and I understand now, and that's what we have to do, is get back to origins and stop living our lives. If we know that the words are being obfuscated, we must make the change, or else we stay ignorant. We stay in the dark. We stay perpetuating that which is not true.
Absolutely.
So
well said.
So what, that was you that went on the last one?
Yep.
Okay. Here's one that's really interesting. Because I brought up the axe or the gavel on the last episode. So I'm actually going to talk about three words, and you'll understand why that is, Brandon, but because they all go together. So there's the word axis. So axe is, right? Because it's the axe is about understanding the place of the middle. The axe is about understanding the gavel. And the gavel, okay, so axe is truth. Is all. Axe just is. The axis, you know, the axis of the earth. The earth's axis, right? So it's in the middle. It's right in the center. And then you have the gavel. The gavel is the axe. Gavel is, and I said this in one of my other presentations, Earthbrain, where I talked about the gavel being Gave L, or give L, because gave means give. So give L. Give also means gift, to give something. So L, as we have said already many times, God, right? So gift of God. Gavel is the gift of God. So to learn the gavel, to learn the axe, is a gift to the student of life who wants to understand the greater unfoldment of truth, to understand the balance within, to understand the alchemical wedding within. So then we have the word climax. So climax, right? To climb the axe. Because that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to climb this mountain, this axe, this to reach a point, and that point being the middle, to the highest point. So to climax comes from the Greek, literally, ladder from weak to strong. So when you think of a mountain, you know, you're weak at the bottom, but once you make it to the top, you have grown strength. You're strong. And climb means to ascend, right? So you're ascending up that mountain to find the axe, to find the middle. An axe means to shape, right? So spiritually, axe means seven. And it's literally the shape of the seven and all things seven, you know, the axe. It's literally the shape of the seven. So we can either, you know, climax sexually as it's a rise and a, you know, a sensual great feeling physically, which is how we procreate, how we, you know, come together and create with each other, you know, male and female coming together to create life. Or we can ascend, you know, raising our kundalini energy from the base all the way, you know, through the seven chakras, which is what the axe is made of. It's made of seven points. The gavel is made of seven points, right? So the axe is the axis. Axes. Axe is the gavel or the netcher, the NTR. It's the netcher in its pure form. So it's the high point of intensity or development, which is, like I said, going up the mountain spiritually, up the spiritual mountain to ascend to the point, the climax. To climb the axe, to find God, the gavel, the gift of God, to find the gavel, to find the gift of God.
That's a powerful, very powerful, very well said as well. And I hope people are starting to realize how important the gavel symbolism actually is from listening to these podcasts. I have one that kind of, it doesn't have to do with the gavel as much as the mountain, but you know, this is a really simple one that somebody can see. It's a mount, you know, it's A and then mount, right? So when we have more amounts of something, when we have a mount of this or of that, it's a greater quantity, you know, or it's a metric for quantity. So if I have more of this, it's a greater amount of this than that. So that's a really simple one, but I brought it up because it just popped in my head when you were talking about climbing the mountain, you know, and the climax, right? So, you know, that's a really simple one, but I thought that one would go in there. And I'll bring up another one that kind of goes along with ascension. It's angel, right? So if you look at angel, it's ang, L, right? But it can be angles, right? You can look at it as an angle, which can be looked at as angles of light. So each angel is an angle of light. So we're all light beings. So we're all angels. And we're just different angles or different beams of light from the one great spirit. But also, if you look at it in the Christian tradition, and you look at the idea that the sun is the anthropomorphized God, right? And in the angles of light coming from the sun are all angels descending, you know, from heaven. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But the Ang also is a bull, right? It's the Angus, you know. So we obviously have all these, you know, mythological characters that are tied in with bull gods, you know, like Baal, right, or Baal, and that is correlated to that. So it's El and Ang, you know, so Angus. So if you look into like AC/DC, you have Angus Young, right? So it's the young bull, right? He's the young the calf in a way, right? So it's kind of interesting that you have that kind of correlation there with the Ang, the El, and then like what he was doing too was, you know, electrifying, right? He had this way of electrifying, like his voice was so powerful. And AC/DC themselves, you know, I'm not an extreme huge fan of AC/DC, but I can respect their music and what they did. So, you know, they were like a young bull coming out onto the scene, you know. And Angus Young is the person that you normally think of, like the head of the band, you know, the bull head, right? The one who's raging through. And he had a raging voice, you know, and he had that energy, that energy within him to release. So Angel, Angus, you know, the bull, the light, the angles of light, God, it's all in there, you know. And I think that's kind of, you know, because we all ascend, right? You were bringing up ascension. So I wanted to bring up angel because we're all angel beings that need to ascend the mountain, you know?
Wow, man. Man, I love what you said about the angles of light. That is really powerful.
Yeah, that one I discovered, I think I talked to you about that. It was many, many years ago.
Yeah, man. Yeah, no, you know, I got into the angles in the, I think it was episode 54 or 53,
right,
where I talked about the angles of the square, the tool, the Masonic tool of the square, all four angles by the, oh my God, what are their names? my brain forgets about names. Well, anyway, the four angles that need to be seen that can describe Jesus, that can describe the cross, that can describe the Jesus, the us within, and these four, Paul, I have to have my notes in front of me, but you know, the four guys angels, that describe Jesus.
I can't remember. It's on the tip of my tongue and I can't remember.
Yeah. But anyway, you get the point. And it's very interesting because these words, you know, angle, angel, angles of light, angle of looking at something, you know, angles of looking at the cross, right? All these ways that we can break down this type of information is so vital. See, this is why it's so important to have the mindset already going in of just always thinking in green, always thinking in green language, always thinking allegorically, always thinking symbolically, because when you do that, already going into the symbols themselves, because like I said, words are bundles of symbols and they are what we phonetically sound out. Well, if we already go into this type of information, these words, with the mindset already within us, already there, we're going to hear these things right away. And, you know, when you think of the word ship, for instance, ship is, it can be either, you know, a ship being a large boat, or it can be to ship something, right? So if you think right away, when you hear the word ship, think of it in both ways at the same time. Because that is how you start thinking in green language. That's how you start thinking more expanded. And, you know, some people might think that drives you mad, but it doesn't, because it's part of the journey. It's actually one of the more exciting parts of the journey, because it means you're starting to expand your mind to see further. So, for instance, if you think of ship in two different ways, you're thinking of how are they parallel? Why would you call shipping mail somewhere, or to ship mail somewhere, why would you call that the same way as a ship as a boat? Well, it's because, well, both have a both go on a journey, right? A ship goes on a journey. It has a beginning and end, and mail has, you're sending mail from one point to another. So it has a journey. They both have a journey. They both are carrying something to somewhere, whether that just be a person or, you know, it could be mail on the boat even, right? But the mail itself is carrying, you know, letters or money or whatever to its destination. So there's a reason why they both are called ship, or to ship something, or a ship that is a boat. So you can see the parallels. See what's similar about them, but what also makes them different enough to where we use them in different contexts, right? So I just wanted to point that out, because I think that's so vital when you're getting into this language, to think that way, to already have that type of information, already have it in your mind that you're already looking into these words. You're already trying to decode words, because that's what makes us, you know, more overall eclectic, right? So was it your turn or my turn? I mean, it was my turn, so you can go. You can take the next one, because I kind of just said all that.
It was good, though. I wanted to add into that. A ship can be looked at as a female womb, and then the male is a masculine principle, which is penetrating, which is moving. You know, so not that the ship isn't moving either, but you know, like a ship that carries mail is the idea of the divine sun, you know, the action being produced from the womb or from a creative principle. But like you said, it's fractal. You find the masculine and feminine within everything. So like a package from mail that's carrying something is also a womb that then you open, and then it births, you know, it gives you something out of it, you know. I'm literally creating something, but it's a sacred feminine principle that holds something, you know, and then something comes out of that, you know. So
right,
I think that's pretty important to understand. I like to bring up three words here in conjunction. So the first one, since we talked about the trivium a lot, is knowledge, right? And so the word knowledge itself can be broken down into no ledge. So you know the ledge, you know your boundary, right? But the word know itself can be broken down into know as in N-O, to say no, one of the most powerful words that one can bring up. And it also can be now. So when you have that knowledge, you are in the now, right? So know now. Or you can say no as in N-O now as well. Like, no, I'm not standing for this anymore because I have the knowledge of my rights, you know? Those who don't know their rights will never say no to evil. So when you know your rights, you will stand up and you will say, no, now this will stop. You know, absolutely. This is going to stop now. This is the ledge. You will go no further. You know, this is it. You know, and then the next one would be understand, which is really easy to stand under if you just, you know, flip those around. And you can break this down even more, but I'm just giving the simple one. What are you standing under? You know, well, you can be standing under many things, but you're holding up something is the point. You're a pillar that's holding up something, you know, so you can be holding up your actions, or you could be holding up your knowledge like we were talking about before. But you're a structure, you're a foundation. So it's a foundation for what you're going to be generating, what you're going to be creating. So knowledge, then understanding, then wisdom, or rhetoric, you know, grammar, logic, rhetoric. you want to look at it that way. Knowledge would be the foundation, and then understanding would be the pillars, and then rhetoric would be the roof on top of the pillars. You could look at it that way. But then action, right? So thought, emotion, action can be thrown into this. Action would be act eye on. So when you truly act in harmony with moral principles, your eye is on. You're a charged particle, like an ion. And I've said this many times, but your eye is also on because you're charged. You're charged with the correct energy. You're charged with divine purpose. You're charged with, you know, green energy, as we might put it. And you're doing the moral action. You're living in harmony with natural law. You're living in harmony with principles. So, you know, I thought I would bring up those three because they kind of all, you know, go together.
For sure. I really love what you just said about the pillars being the support of what one knows. And that is, man, that's really, really powerful right there. I never thought about it like that. To stand under the support of what one knows. That's pretty awesome, you know, to be able, and then you could look at it like understand, to stand under what one knows, but then to go on top of that and overstand and then interstand. So you're really getting the full eclectic
right
vision of what you know. So that way you have a better, you know, it's just like the pie chart. The more that you understand each piece of the pie, the more that you have an understanding because you see the whole, you have a better whole picture vision because now you not only know this information, but now you see how it all connects, how each piece connects in the pie as the whole pie.
Absolutely.
So that's very interesting. Wow.
Well said. I remember the four angels, I believe. It's Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, and Uriel, I think. I think those are the ones that, and that's not in Freemasonry, but those are the four, like, cardinal angels in Christianity, I believe. So those are, like, the four, you know, angels or the, in the Bibles, you know.
I think those are corresponding, but I could be, let me see here. Now I really want to go back and look because that's going to drive me crazy too. I don't remember where right. my daggone notes are. I can't find it. Well, we'll just go on, but, I'm sure you're right. But also, I think it's because I remember the name Paul and Michael and John and
something. Yeah, I know Raphael, Michael, and Gabriel are the three that stand out to me. Uriel, I'm not sure. Maybe it's been changed. Who knows?
Well, don't hold me to all that. I definitely want to
<Me either. laughs>
look that up. I mean, that's the thing is a lot of this information, it's very difficult to remember certain things. And I hate saying this because it's not trivial, but in my mind it is trivial. That's bad on me, you know. Like I don't want to think of those names because you know they're typical names, the ones that I'm trying to remember. They're very typical names. They're names of ordinary people that you hear about every day, but to remember them in the order and remember them as the four. It is very important, and I, you know, I'm just kind of not remembering. It's just there's a lot to remember, but I do remember what was so crucial about what I was saying was about understanding these four men. They are giving their four angles, their four viewpoints, their four perceptions to describe this being on the cross. This high being, this, you know, being of light. And, you know, it's a very important thing to understand, but it's also about understanding that it's the angels, these four angels. So I wanted to bring up the word, or not word. Well, yeah, it is a word, but also it's a letter. is the letter H. So 8 is H without the ch, right? So it's also the letter H is the 8th letter of the alphabet, right? And H is a symbol of a bridge, right? So think about the two pillars being bridged together. This is an H. So H bridges the G in the alphabet. H bridges the G and the I. So it bridges the I being us, the lowercase g, to the higher case g. So the I, the lowercase I, is the lowercase g, because the lowercase I is the middle pillar. I, right? So it bridges the g to us. It bridges us to God symbolically. But also, you know, when we understand it symbolically, we are reaching the Creator. We're reaching God through these degrees, especially in the middle degree, right? So I is the individual. G is the seven. G is God. And when we bridge our hemispheres, it generates the H, or the heart, based intelligence, because heart is in the middle, right? The intel and then the gents coming together to create the intel I gents. So it's the alchemical wedding. The H has to do with the alchemical wedding. It's the wedding or alignment to the infinite. 8 is the infinite, which is the all within the all, right? So if you can see how that all is right there in the letter, in the symbol, the letter H, it is the 8. 8 is the H. It's just without the CH. And so once we understand this, we see how it is, why it's in that position in the alphabet, then we can also bring that knowledge into the tracing board and really see how it all comes together, and especially in the entered and past degrees.
Yeah, that's beautifully said. I think we've talked about that in the past, actually, but you very clearly stated that, and it's powerful to understand that. That's why I don't agree with people who attack the alphabet, our English alphabet, and even our language, because when you understand this type of, you know, breakdown, when you're understanding these things from the green energy, from the center of the Anuhata, you see that it's a lot more important than it's just like, oh, you know, it's a corrupted language, you shouldn't ever use it, like, and demonize the language itself. But there's so much, the way that the English language works out and the alphabet works out is so esoterically, like, just almost perfected, you know, in such a crazy way, because of all the hidden symbolism within it. Now, I'm not going to go as far as to say that it is perfected. I am just saying that it's not something to be demonized or just to be swept under the rug, like it's meaningless, and because it seems to be extremely profoundly powerful in bringing forward synchromistic messages, obviously. But, you know, maybe that's just me, because I'm, you know, that's my language, that's my speaking language. So I'm sure in any other language you'll be able to find green language, obviously. I found some in studying, you know, many different languages. Obviously, English is based off of multiple languages. Latin is one of the biggest ones. But I wanted to bring up a word, and it's an interesting one, and it took me a while to spot this, but it's innocence, right? So innocence, as in a child with no guilt, you know, a being with no guilt. You're innocent in something, right? You have done no harm. You've committed no crime. You are not guilty, right? Well, let's break it down a little bit differently. Let's pronounce it just a little bit differently, let's say innescence. Innocence is innescence. You know, so like for a child, if we're looking at it just solely through a child mind, they're innocent, right? And that's usually what we'll say. They're pure innocence, right? They have pure innocence. So, but they're also nescient, you know, meaning they don't have the access to all that knowledge, you know. They're not necessarily ignorant, but they're innescence, and it's because they're innocent, you know. So I found that one to be profoundly powerful when looking at words, and that was one I found, I think, last year or something. So I don't know if you ever thought about that one, but it's an interesting one.
I'm thinking about it right now. I just kept thinking about, like, in a sense, you know.
Right, that's the other way you can break it down. Yep.
Or in a scent, meaning like the sense that we get from our nose, that we're breathing in, you know, this sense to sense something, right? To sense something within.
Right.
But, you know, the parallels are not quite there. But yeah, what you just said, it makes sense with the definition.
Right. With, you know, nescience being that you are innocent, you know, you're not guilty of ignorance. That's why I thought that was powerful, because, you know, if you are nescient about something, then there's no guilt. There's no blame there.
Right.
If you're ignorant of something, there is guilt. You know, there's responsibility.
For sure. Wow. You know? I have three quick ones that have to do with the media, if you want to hear these. So there's Emmy Award, you know, the Emmy Award.
Right.
This is Emmy. Think about it. M-E. Me. Me. Emmy is me. M-E. Me. Right? Which is, you know, the ego being me. Look at me. I'm the star. I'm winning prizes as an actor, right? An Emmy, winning, and people being so happy that they're winning these big awards, these big Emmy awards, while slavery is in place. Because look at me, you know? Me. And then there's MTV, which is empty, and then the vision, MTV is music television, right? So it's empty vision, because it's about getting people to get rid of or empty their vision and use MTV's mind controlled vision. You know, it's about having an empty vision to even, you know, be able to even watch this crap, right? Because that's what it is. And it's just emptiness. It's, you are filling your mind with just complete garbage and emptiness when you watch this show, right? And then there's paparazzi, right? The paparazzi, because it's papa, then rots, and then the letter I. So the I being the third eye. So like the father or patriarch that destroys the vision, you know, as a cameraman who will do anything to, you know, just go out and get footage for the tabloids, or, you know, to create some kind of narrative with the story that they're getting, whether it hurts anybody or not, right? So you could also look at it like over penetration of the papa government, media, the daddy media, shoving their propaganda in our minds to rot our third eye. So think about that.
Yeah, you nailed it. I remember thinking about the MTV one years ago, and I'm glad you brought that up. I had thought about putting it in the presentation. I actually had MTV and television on one slide, and I had to take them off because, you know, I had a time limit for what I was doing. I will have to tell you, though, I'm going to have to jump off here in a moment.
Oh, okay.
But you are totally welcome to continue on without me if you'd like to.
I might do that, actually.
Yeah, I don't see why you wouldn't be able to do that, you know?
Yeah, there's a few more that I wanted to get. You know, I mean, there's so many, and I know I'm not going to get through them all, but yeah, I mean, this is going to be close to a 3-hour show, so for sure I'll just go ahead and let you get going, and I will talk about some other ones.
Yeah, let me see if there's any more I wanted to bring up. Let's see. No, that's good. I feel comfortable with that for now.
Okay.
But yeah, I didn't realize we were going to be on here this long, but I have a doctor's appointment here shortly. So,
okay. Yeah, no worries. I got plenty of material I can finish off with, but yeah, man, I really appreciate you taking the time to get on here. And, you know, it's something that you and I have been wanting to do for a very long time, and we will continue to break down a lot of these words and definitely get into allegory, which I'm really hoping that we'll start a video show of allegory. And maybe that's something we can get into on the next episode or a future episode. We can talk about that more. So yeah, man, it's been awesome, and I really appreciate everything that you've said. And it's there's a lot of stuff to think about here.
Absolutely. It's been, again, a pleasure, and I can't wait to come back on with you and, you know, break down. I mean, obviously, we're going to be breaking down words till, you know, I mean, throughout all of our work, we always do this. So, you know, there will be no absence or lack of, you know, word breakdowns or green language within our work. So it's been a pleasure to be here. And, you know, I look forward to being back on.
Awesome. Well, I will definitely be in touch, and we'll get you back on soon. So thanks again.
Sounds great. Sounds awesome, Nathan.
Cool. All right. Talk
to you
soon. Have
a good day.
You too. All right, guys. So I am going to go ahead and spend probably another 10 or 15 minutes breaking down some words, and these are, there's a lot to cover, and I probably won't get through all the ones that I have, but I definitely want to share some really interesting ones that will help you think a little bit more about how words can be broke down and their meaning and so much more. So the other names that I wanted to talk about are, as far as like famous celebrities and political names, look at the word or the name Vladimir Putin. So you have the last name Putin, which means put in, right? You can look at it as put in. And then Vladimir, when you look up the etymology, it means to rule over. It literally means to rule over. So Vladimir Putin was put into power to do what? To rule over. He was put in, he was Putin, to rule over. That's his job, to rule over the people, to rule Russia, right? So, then we also have the famous doctor of the past few years, Dr. Anthony Fauci. Now, think about that word, Fauci. Fauci is the one that's used the most. Right? We hear the word and we just hear Dr. Fauci or Fauci. So Fauci is Fauci, as in bad energy. Right? And that's what he is. He's bad energy. Anybody who's awake knows that he is bad energy. Right? So also, when you look up the word Fauci, the etymology of Fauci, it literally means sickle. So, you know, you have the character Death, who holds a sickle, right? So you could call him Dr. Death or Dr. Sickle. Now, then the other guy who was playing this big famous role during this whole pandemic was Mr. Bill Gates. Bill Gates is Gates of Bill, Gates of Baal, B-A-A-L. And Baal being the Canaanite Phoenician god of fertility and weather, specifically rainstorms. So Baal meaning owner or master or lord. That's what the etymology of Baal means. So master or owner of the gates or doors. Doors to things and places like foods and drugs and planes and etc. You know, you name it. That person has his hands in just about everything in this world. So Bill Gates supposedly has lots of power to open and close many corporate doors in our world. And he acts like, you know, he believes he's this god or, you know, master or owner of our world. And it's not the case. It's an illusion from him, and it's an illusion from others who support the idea that, oh, this person is, you know, he cares about our well-being and he's putting all his money and funneling his money into all these different things because he cares about us. Not recognizing that it's an ego trip to control us. And whether you believe that this person is, you know, some puppet or some benevolent person who wants to do good in this world, it doesn't matter. He is a destroyer. He does not care about us. And it's very obvious when you really, really look into what he has done. Okay, when you're being honest. So then you have these other, like, you think about the names of these other presidents and, you know, the secretaries like George Bush and Dick Cheney, right? You have the Dick in the Bush with Mr. Colin Powell, right? Dick and Bush and Colin. And then who followed Dick and Bush and Colin? You have Obama. So you have Oba meaning Papa and Ma meaning Mama. So Papa and Mama, aka Mommy and Daddy state and government to, you know, come to the rescue and save us all, right? So Obama, you know, like a little baby. I need Mama. And Oba, Papa, right? So it's that's how people were when this man was in office. Because they looked at him as the savior. Just like they do for Trump. Just like they do for Biden. Doesn't matter. Whoever's in office, that is Mommy and Daddy. Now I want to get into a few more words. Let's talk about some of these other words of government and dark occult mockery. So you have the word court. Court is a place where we go to either be judged by the judge or to fight a ticket or to fight someone without a physical altercation between you and the defendant or you and the victim or you and the counterpart, right? So if you go into court you are going into the one of the higher places in our judicial system, right? So that means that you're going into a place of the highest power in man's law, or one of the highest powers in man's law. But it's a place where you are judged to either pay a fine or go to jail or win a case, right? But it's about understanding that in a courtroom, you are there to see the power of man's law. How man can just throw you in a cage, whether you're innocent or guilty of your crime or whatever you did. So it's to see their power. So court is see our, and then T equals power, to see our power. And then you have the word police. It's police, as the poles of the brain hemispheres are iced, which means there's no warmth. There's nothing in the middle. That's why, you know, when you look at the police cars, they have the red and blue lights flashing, because it's about being stuck in one pole or the other, but nothing in between. So that's why they are not balanced. So to have flashing red and blue lights means unbalanced, no balance. So it goes deeper in correspondence to the inner pole police. So if you're not familiar with the inner pole police, you should definitely look into that, because the inner pole police are the world police. And they actually have a cold gray blue symbol of the world with an Excalibur sword going through the poles of Earth, which are iced. Right? You have the North Pole and the South Pole. They are iced. So this inner pole symbol is part of the dark occult mockery. They're stating that police are nothing more than iced minds and hearts that will do whatever they're told because they have no heart. They have no middle. They have no balance. And Interpol itself is saying the inner poles of the self are iced. So then there's officer. So off I seer, right? Off and then the I and then C-E-R. Off I seer. The middle I is off. And then you have cop. Cop is a cop E, because cops are in uniform, one form. So they're all just copies of each other. They're all Smiths, right? Like the Matrix. They're all Smiths. They're all out to do whatever they're told. They're all connected to one hive mind. And then you have Nazi. Nazi is to not see, because the eye is off. But it also means to see the knot. So you have the swastika is a knot. It's a knot. It's a binding knot to bind everything in the middle, to see the knot. So, you know, it's good to look at these words backwards and forwards and, you know, look at the double meanings, because, you know, we have to be able to look at it this way. What regardless of what you believe, that is what it is saying, okay? And then you have military. You know, Nazis are military, right? So you have my light awry. Vowels are interchangeable. So you have my light, A-W-R-Y, my light awry. My inner light has gone awry. It has left. And then there is sheriff, which is she riff. Riff is an abbreviation to restrain, which means to hold down or to hold back. And she equals the sacred feminine. So sheriff is she riff, you know, to hold back the sacred feminine, to restrain care, because that's what the sacred feminine generates, is care. So to hold back care, to restrain care. And then you have the word or abbreviation IRS, which is iris. Again, vowels are interchangeable, so you can add the I between the R and the S. So it's the it is the biggest man-made eye keeping track of us, the IRS, who is always coming after us for our money to owe them, whether it's moral or immoral. It doesn't matter. It's this eye is on us at all times, keeping tabs on us. It is the man-made eye. And then you have the word lie. Think about this one. Lie equals lay down or sleep, which means spiritually bereft. You know, if you look at it from through a spiritual lens, because if you're laying down or you're asleep spiritually, you are bereft of spirituality. Because to lie means to not be awake. To lie, to actually lie to someone, to transgress against someone's rights, to lie is to not be awake. You know, still in base consciousness, desiring to be comfortable in the bed of lies, to be asleep, to sleep in your lies, to lie down. So how about evil? Evil is Eve is ill. So the sacred feminine is ill. Eve represents the sacred feminine principle, which is ill, which has been ill or sick for thousands of years, with especially within the aggregate of the collective consciousness. And that means care has been really lost that long. So that is why we can't find our care, because we collectively are so ill. Eve, because there's so much evil in the world. Man's ego has gone wild into pure evil all over the world. These vicious, awful transgression acts of evil all over the world. So Eve is ill. The sacred feminine is ill. Care is very hard to discover, but we have to do it individually. That's how we're going to raise care back into consciousness, back into the collective consciousness. And here's another one with the sacred feminine being harmed or in distress, which is crisis. So cry Isis. Right? So the sacred feminine is in distress when there is a crisis. Something terrible has happened. Some evil act has taken place. So Eve is ill, and then Isis, that means Isis is crying, or to cry out for Isis, to cry out for the sacred feminine. Like we're something awful has happened and we need care. We need help. We need, you know, empathy. We need something to help us deal with this awful thing, this awful event that has taken place. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and just end this show with this one last thing here. And this kind of goes with the last show, number 55, where I talk about the language of the birds. So we have the word bear. So bear is B-ear. Bear meaning to hold. So to hold information with the ear, right? And bear means to give birth to bear a child, right? So bird can be birth, bird, birth, which means to give rise to. Birth means to give rise to, like a bird, right? And to be bearded symbolizes bird head. Bearded is bird head, because bearded represents adult being fully raised. So to be raised, to be able to hear the language of the bears or the birds, because bears, when you think about the little bear and the great bear, which are the most high, especially the little bear is the most high of the animals in the constellations, right? Stars, stellar, right? This is part of understanding the stellar cult, the stellar mythos. So look at the beards of the learned men, the learned men sarcophagi from ancient Egypt, which means a raised, learned man, because it's a wisdom beard. It's a wisdom bird. It's a beard, bear. It's to bear wisdom, which is part of the head, because it's about striving to become bird-headed spiritually. So I just wanted to share that little bit, and I'm going to go ahead and end the show with this quote. The basic tool for the manipulation of reality is the manipulation of words. If you control the meaning of words, you control the people who must use those words. And this is a quote from Philip K. Dick, who is a famous science fiction writer who inspired the movies Blade Runner and Minority Report, which are both very powerful allegorical sci-fi movies about the future. Okay? Definitely recommend watching those movies if you haven't done so yet. But we have to be aware of how words can be manipulated, how they can be obfuscated, how words are ways in which we are controlled by if we are not conscious of how they work. That's why green language is so important, because it is, most people don't even get into etymology, let alone green language, because green language is abstract. It's definitely something that is not in the vernacular. And, you know, we have to become conscious of this way of thinking and seeing and hearing, because that's how we're going to become more conscious. So, well, that was a really awesome show, and I'm really thankful that Brandon got to give the time that he did. So I also want to thank you guys for tuning in and giving your time and attention. And if you're interested for more shows, presentations, or news, please go to cubbyhole.com. And also make sure to check out my new video show, Outcasting, Bits of Science Towards Freedom, where I do short shows explaining many different critical topics in a more simplified and refined way. It's a very short show, and, you know, it's just like it says right in the subtitle, I'm giving short bits of information that can help us see the bigger picture of not only what's going on, but how we can find solutions to help us become more conscious and aware to move forward in the direction of freedom, away from man's law and away from ignorance, away from slavery. And if you have any questions regarding the topics for any of these shows, please email me at cubbyhole.com or cubbyhole@mail.com. Also, if you have found any value within the cubbyhole, any donations are always appreciated at this website, because any of the funds that are donated go directly to the upkeep of the Cubbyhole website. So if you really love what you're hearing and it resonates with you, then making a donation, just, you know, it adds to it. I know it's money. Maybe you don't believe in money. Maybe you think it's just a bunch of crap, but we gotta, and it is, especially the belief in it, but it's what is helping us in this system right now as we're trying to unravel the mysteries of this system and ourselves. And, you know, we got to do what we can while we're in this cage, while we're in this system. And we need all the help that we can get to get through this together. So finding value in other people's work. I mean, if you can't afford to give a donation, then make your own podcast, make presentations, make a documentary, do art, anything to help all of us move forward in the right direction towards freedom. So if you do want to make a donation, all you got to do is hit the donation button on the website at the top, and it's pretty easy to navigate from that point. And thanks again to anybody who has donated so far. It really is much appreciated. Okay. Well, guys, I'm your host, Nate Kapp. Thank you for listening. And keep in mind to do no harm, defend truth, and keep transcending dogma.